Morning for us, but I don't know what time it'll be for you. It's Monica Slavopa from Houston, Texas. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great.
You sound great.
Thank you.
You sound happy and almost as happy as Deborah Sailor, who is the happiest girl in the whole USA. Do you know her? I guess you don't know her.
No.
I interviewed her yesterday. She's got a new CD out, and she's just bubbling over with enthusiasm, which I think is good. Now, you live in Houston, and you work with rehab. You work with who now?
Well, I work with an education center in Houston right now, and I do contract work for them, sometimes more than others, but it just depends on the season, how busy they are. And I do Braille reading for them. But I guess that's a good way to put it.
You do Braille reading for them?
Yeah.
In other words, I don't understand.
Okay. Basically, they have different books and tests that need to be read, and I kind of read them for format. Before the students take them.
Okay. In other words, you're a proofreader.
Yeah.
Okay. That's better. A proofreader. So they do brailing for people, right. And then you go in and look, and I bet you, I know what, I bet you read braille with your eyes, don't you?
Oh, yeah, right.
You can't?
No.
You don't have any eyes. You're total?
Total blind.
Well, I thought you had some sight.
No, I love people to think that, though.
Well,
it makes you feel great, though.
It does make you feel. It makes you feel wonderful. I probably told this story before. When I was working at I worked at this restaurant, and back then, this was 15 years ago, I could hear real well, and I could thread my way through the table to the bathroom and back without touching a soul. And people would say, hell, he's got to be able to see. How could he do that if he's blind?
Exactly.
I thought, and I don't know why I thought this, but I thought you had some vision.
No, I can see light out of my right eye, but it really has to be bright, like stage lights or the sun.
Other than that, you're totally blind.
Yes, sir.
Well, you fool me, Monica. And of course, I only met you about 5 minutes one time.
That's right.
By the way, those of you who were at our Houston gathering, Monica came for the Saturday morning, so some of you probably met her. I sure thought you could see. So, but you read Braille with your fingers in, right?
Yes, I've been reading Braille all my life.
That would be the only way you could read it. I suppose. You think about it. That sure fooled me. That amazes me. And I'm blind. Yeah.
Exactly.
You fooled the blind guy. It's not nice to fool the blind guy. All right. But you have a sighted husband?
I do have a sighted husband.
Okay. He drives you.
He does drive, but I do like to be independent, so I do take the Metrolift service here. It's like paratransit in Philadelphia or something like that. But, he gets he worries so much when I take it, and I have to remind him. I say, how many years am I married to you? I said, and how many years have I not been with you? And then he says, oh, yeah, you've been doing this a lot longer than I've known you, so.
Yeah, so you've been doing it all your life. How is the paratransit system in Houston?
It's okay. I mean, it's kind of like if you need to get there early and they're early, you're great, but if they're running late, then you're late too. But as long as your workers understand that, I am on subscription, so you do tend to get there at a fairly good time.
So you're one of those who just doesn't worry about little things like that.
No, I don't. I've done so many things. I feel like I'm a some kind of pioneer or something, you know?
Well, you are. If you've done a lot of things that maybe some other blind people haven't done. Whereas I would worry myself crazy if we were. I hate being late, worse than anything in the world.
Oh, I mean, I don't like it either. So I try to schedule my rides early so I can get there.
So you get there early, yeah.
I'm not a late person.
Yeah, you have to be on subscription or 24-hour notice or something with them, I suppose, the way it is.
Yeah, you basically call a day in advance, you know, if you need to go somewhere, and they'll schedule you. But if you're going somewhere, you know, four or five times a week, you can get a subscription.
And they'll just come and pick you up, rain, shine, or otherwise.
Exactly.
Okay, do you go, this place that you work for is not the Lighthouse, it's called...
No, I'd rather not say the name, so...
Oh, okay.
It's basically just an education. I go to a building, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been doing it for a while, I guess about a year and a half now, and... you know, it brings income in the house, you know.
Well, it brings income in, and you're obviously good at it, or they wouldn't keep calling you. I mean, you wouldn't keep doing it. So you were born at, how did you get blind? I mean, what happened?
Well, I was born premature at five and a half months, 2 pounds, 1 ounce.
Oh, my.
I was one of those, gave too much incubator and, you know, too much oxygen.
Oxygen, yeah.
Incubator, so...
I talked to a lady yesterday that said, well, you know, how much is too much? They gave me oxygen. If they hadn't done that, I'd be dead.
Exactly, and that's what the court said when we tried to sue them. But
yeah, you wouldn't have lived if they hadn't given you oxygen.
Right.
The fact that they gave you too much is, how much is too much? You know, you survived it.
Yeah, that's what they tell my parents. You know, either do you want somebody dead or do you want someone alive, you know?
That's blind with an inconvenience.
Right.
And so you've been with this all your life. You've been blind all your life. Never had any sight.
No.
And you grew up where?
I grew up in New York City.
Really?
Yes.
In the Big Apple, in New York City.
In New York. And my parents were very protective of me. I've never taken a train by myself. They kind of, I went to mainstream school all my life.
Uh-huh.
And I did go to a special school on Saturdays. It was called the Lighthouse for the Blind in New York.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of neat. You get to spend time with other people that were blind. So, and you got to do different activities, and you were in groups. And I was a music person, so I played the violin and did the music theory. And I went there for about 10 years on my weekends. And so I went to public school in the city, and there was a resource room, so there were probably 8 other students that were blind as well.
Yeah.
And then my parents were so protective that they wanted to move me out of the city, so they moved us to Long Island, New York, and so I wouldn't have to take any buses or trains, and that'll come into play later. But I basically went to... Then I was always considered the first, you know, because I went to a school, you know, where there wasn't anybody else blind, and
uh-huh.
I dealt with that all my life, but overcomers win, right?
Yeah, but your parents didn't want you to, they didn't think you could function.
Yeah, they just were protective, you know, they don't want to let their kids out on their own. I mean, I have brothers and sisters, but they could all see.
Yeah.
I was the only blind person in the family, so I don't even like that word. I don't know.
What?
You know, it's just...
Blind?
Yeah, it's just...
Well...
But it's okay.
I wish there was another term for not being able to see besides blind, because I'm far from blind.
Right.
My eyes don't work, but...
Right.
You know, I wish there was another term, because I'm, you know, I see many, many things and even know a few. I've even learned a little bit in 64 years. So, yeah, I wish there was another term, but I don't like any of the terms they use, like sight impaired or visually challenged. It's all crap. I don't like that.
Oh.
I wish there was another word. I agree with you.
But yeah, I went through high school and went through schooling out on Long Island. I had an itinerant teacher that would come to the school.
So they moved you to a less populated part of Long Island.
Well, they tried to move us to the best school district.
Uh-huh.
So I went to school like in the Half Hollow Hills district, I guess. I don't remember. But
yeah.
They just wanted me to be able to take a school bus to school instead of having to ride the trains, because in I guess in the city you would take the trains and buses to school, like in junior high and high school.
Really? Do kids do that?
Take the
subway to high school?
That's... Yeah, I've had friends that did that in the city, and my parents didn't want me to do that, so...
Well, I don't know. Wouldn't hurt you. I mean,
no, it
you know,
wouldn't. But at the time, and then now looking back, I wished that they would have. But you know, for whatever reason, that they were just trying to be protective, and so
they were doing the best they could. They had no experience with blind children, and they were doing the best. You know, we can't knock them because they didn't have any idea. You'd never been through this before, and neither had they. It was a new experience for both of you.
Exactly.
So
you know. It was good. I had great teachers, and you were going to ask a question, I think.
I might have been going to ask you a question, but they fixed it where the school bus came by Monica's house and picked her up every day.
Yes. And that's what they did for all students in that neighborhood, you know. I would take the school bus to school with everybody else.
And your father had a job in the city, I guess he went to?
Yes, my father, he's entrepreneurial. He worked in a bank, and then he owned a shoe store for 10 years.
Really?
And so he would commute every day to Queens, work, and my mom worked with him, you know, certain days a week. And then she had days off, too, so she could be with the kids.
Yeah.
And,
we've often talked about... If you were living in New York City, would be a great place for a blind person to live if you could afford it. If you had a job, because when you walk out, everything's right there. I mean, there's a grocery store a block away, and there's a guy, you know, selling hot dogs right by your building. And when you walk outside, there's just restaurants and everything you need right there. And people in New York come home and they buy a little handful of groceries and they take them home. And I mean, they don't stock up like we do in Texas. Go to Sam's and buy 100 cans of pork and beans.
Exactly.
You know, they don't do that.
And that's when I was single. That's what I would do, is make sure that I lived in a place that was close to supermarkets that I could walk to myself or take a cab if I needed to.
Yeah, well, that's what New York people do. So, but anyway, they had you out where in the less populated area where the school bus came by, and you got through high school. Were you in high school, played in the band? Did you sing in the...
I played in the orchestra.
You played violin, that's right, you said.
I played violin, and I sang. I'm a singer.
Really?
I sang in all the choruses and choirs and jazz groups and...
No kidding. Jazz groups?
Yeah, just a little bit of vocal jazz here, you know, here and there. I don't do much of it now, but except sing at my church. But
did you become proficient at violin, or?
I did, but then when I left high school, I had to decide, you know, if I was going to do violin or sing, and I decided to stay with the vocal part because it was easier, and. My violin got stolen consequently. And so I don't have one anymore, so I don't remember anything I learned. But I did. I played for 10 years, and I was okay at it, I think.
Well, next time we have a gathering in Houston, Texas, I'll bring you one.
Thanks.
I've got a nice one. I've got a really good sounding fiddle.
Oh, wow.
That was given to me by a lady who has long since passed away. She had two fiddles, and she said, I'll give you one of these if you'll fix one of them up for me. So, of course, I kept the best one.
Of course.
Well, you know. Anybody would have. I thought a lot about it. And, you know, she wouldn't. She didn't know the difference. She just wanted one of them fixed. And so I fixed them both and kept the best one. Anyway, why couldn't you do violin and vocal both? I don't understand.
It was because I felt like it would take a lot of time, you know, to be in the orchestra. And in college is different than being in an orchestra in high school.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't think I was that. I thought I was good to be in a high school orchestra, but I didn't know if the teachers in college would want to take as much time as someone did in high school, so I dropped it. You know, because singing just came so much easier. I just learned that much quicker.
Well, sure, you just walk up and sing. I mean, you memorize the words and you go sing. You don't have to...
You know, and in violin, I guess because of the bowing, and you try to bow the same way that everyone else does, but... You know, I have another call coming in, so I'm letting it go through.
But you couldn't see anybody else bowing, so you didn't know how they bowed, so you bowed like you wanted to.
Right, but it wasn't so much bowing, like having a style. It's when you're playing the orchestra, you want it, when they're using a down bow for the nose. He wanted to be having the bow in the same direction as them.
Yes.
And so I felt like I would be putting pressure. Not that I don't like pressure, but I just thought it might be too much, you know, in the college orchestra, so I left it.
Well, that's a shame, but maybe you can someday pick it back up.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows what'll happen. Well, I'll tell you what let's do. Let's take a break, and we'll take you to college, get you into your higher education. Monica Slavova is our guest, and we'll be back in just a minute. More Blind Like Me. Hang on.
Our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sites, here's Tim Cummings.
Have you ever been reading something and there's a word that you come across that you don't know what it means and you say, boy, I'd really like to look that up in an easy manner? Well, now you can. If you go to www.dictionary.com, you can look up any word. It's very easy to use. There's a search box where you can type in the word and you can either look up the definition of the word or look up a synonym for the word. It's a very easy site to use. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. The website again is www.dictionary.com for Blind Sites. This is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights. Do you know about the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line, stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping your big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is BlindMySmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
All right, we are back with Monica Svopa, who has finally taught me how to pronounce her name. And that's good. People say I should know that. I've been thinking about your name all day and thought, well, I know how to pronounce it, but I was wrong, wasn't I? Svopa. S-V-O-P-A.
Yes.
Jaws doesn't do well with it.
Oh, I know. No, my maiden name was Rodriguez. A lot easier to say and spell.
That would be all right. But so you graduated high school in New York.
Yes.
In New York City or New York State.
Mm-hmm.
You never went to Batavia School at all.
No, sir.
Well, Tim Hendel would be so disappointed. He thinks every blind person in the world ought to go to Batavia. Okay, so we got you out of high school. What did you think you wanted to do? You wanted to sing, but what did you think?
I kind of, I just college was always the next step, so I thought I would just major in business. I'll major in business management. And that's what I did. I majored in business and minored in music. Went to Ithaca College because it was a very good music school. And was, the first blind student they'd ever had.
You were?
Mm-hmm.
The first blind student they'd ever had?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing in and of itself.
Yeah, and so I went and talked to all my professors ahead of time and told them about myself, and they asked how they could best help me, and I said, as long as you don't say this and that when you're writing on the board, I'll be okay.
Yeah, as long as you actually tell me what you wrote on the board.
Exactly.
Yeah, and were you able to get books in Braille?
No. Actually, what I ended up doing was the school had a disabled students office. So they would help me find readers, and I'd find readers for my classes, and they would read the books on tape for me.
Okay. So we had cassettes by then.
Yes, cassettes. And I would read the books on cassette, and I would tape my lectures, and I would go home and take notes. I did have different devices, to use in college.
Like?
I had a Keynote, which I took everywhere.
I remember those.
And they were so bulky. I think that's why I have my back problems, because I was carrying in my backpack with all my other stuff.
Yeah, they were big and bulky, and,
yes.
And the speech was terrible.
It was terrible, but horrible. I got used to it. And and I'd wear an earpiece, so I wouldn't bother anybody. In high school, I used my Braille writer in class and took notes, and I didn't care if it bothered anyone or not. But
yeah, because those things are noisy.
Yes, but in college, I thought, everybody's paying tuition just like me. Maybe they want it quiet. So.
All right, and so you use your Keynote companion, is what they called it.
I did. I used that, and I would take notes, and then I'd put those into Braille with my Braille writer.
All right.
And I listened to my cassettes. It would just take, I don't know. Anyone sighted, I guess they could learn stuff really quick. But for me,
college was a lot of work, wasn't it?
It was a lot of work. And I could stay up till 1 in the morning sometimes doing work. And it was all so good. I mean, I learned so much. And it was neat because whenever we had study groups, I would study with my friends and I'd say, well, this is what the teacher's talking about. They go, when did they say that? Like, oh, my. We don't remember that. So they'd always come to me for notes and stuff.
Yeah, that's good. Now, you lived in a dorm on campus?
I did live in a dorm. For 2 years, I lived in a dorm, and then they had apartments kind of a little bit off campus but considered on campus.
Uh-huh.
And I lived in the apartments with a friend of mine. She became a good friend. She was my college roommate. She was the one that introduced me to my husband, actually.
And your parents could afford this, or the commission helped you, or what?
The commission did help me. I got aid from the Commission for the Blind, and I also applied for financial aid, and my parents said that they never had to take out student loans to pay for me to go to school.
Really?
No, but for my other siblings, they did.
But your grades were high enough that you got some scholarship money.
I mean, I didn't have the best grades. I didn't get A's, but I didn't get D's,
Business management and music.
Yes.
And, okay. So you got a four-year degree, a B.A.
Yeah, a B.S.
A what?
A B.S.
Is that what they call it?
That's what they call it.
B.S.?
Uh-huh.
Well, I got one of those. I'm full of B.S.
I know, right?
Yeah. All right, so you got your degree and you started looking for work.
I did start. Well, actually, it was the summer of 91, and I'm dating myself, but I'm 35.
Yeah.
And so I basically, in that summer, I never worked through college.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Did you sing in jazz bands through college?
I sang like in vocal jazz, and I sang in the choir at school. And then it came to graduate, and I was like, "What am I going to do?"
Yeah, now you got to find a job.
And not only that, but like the commission had bought me a computer, and I was afraid of it, and so everybody would use it except me. I don't know what I thought it was going to do to me, but then I ended up just being real honest with my counselor, and I just said, I don't know how to use this stuff. And I said, I did mobility in college, but then I thought, I don't remember how to cross the street, because campus streets are different. They're small. When you go to a big city, you're, I don't know.
You went through a little, kind of a little fear thing there, didn't you?
I did go through fear. I was scared, you know.
I think that's pretty normal.
My parents are, they were living in the Dominican Republic, so I went to visit them for the summer, and basically when I told you my violin got stolen, everything in New York in an apartment that my parents owned, and people just went in and took everything. They took my computer equipment. They even took my braille writer. And
they just
took everything, so I had nothing. And so my counselor said, why don't you go to a school in Albany, New York, that it's like a day program where you can just get your rehab skills, you know, learn mobility. Because I was like, okay, you know, so I lived with a family. I went to school for about 9 months. I learned the computer, and I learned my mobility skills, and I tell you, it was life changing, you know. I had more confidence. Yeah, I mean, and then I thought, okay, well, I need to find a job, so I did some interning. I entered at the New York State Assembly. And I did that I interned there like 3 days a week.
How did you get that? I mean, how did that?
I guess I had met friends, and there was a career counselor there, and she knew someone, and I had became friends with them, and they basically said, hey, would you like to come work for this assemblyman? And I said, sure.
This is the New York State Assembly is a governing body.
Yes.
Of the state. One of the governing bodies of the state of New York.
Mm-hmm.
Would be like our, we have a Senate and a House.
Yes, and so it would be like the House.
Yeah, it would be like the, okay, it would be like the House of Representatives in New York. Mm-hmm. The New York Assembly, and you worked for one of the assemblymen.
I did.
Doing what?
I did a lot of letter writing for him, for his constituents.
But then you were up on the computer, and you could the greatest thing that ever happened to blind people.
Yes, yes. I felt proficient enough, and I did that, and I did, he was chairman of a Hispanic task force, so
mm-hmm.
I helped him with events that way, and I don't remember much of what I did. I remember just being in a great place and meeting a lot of great people.
And there were other interns. You weren't the only one.
No, I wasn't the only one in that office. I think every office had an intern. And
the rest of them were sighted. I mean, they weren't doing something for you that they weren't doing for sighted kids.
Oh, no.
The rest of them were... And so you wrote letters. You got to meet a lot of people.
Yeah.
You met a lot of intelligent folks. And
I did, but they didn't, you know, it was a strictly volunteer experience. And then in January of 93, I think,
mm-hmm.
It was an election year, 92, and there was a senator, a Hispanic senator, that was coming in, and she needed an intern, and she was going to pay somebody.
Uh-huh.
And so they said, hey, would you like to go meet her? And I said, sure. So I went to her office, and we just talked, and she said, would you like to work for me? I said, if you're interested. She said, you want to start tomorrow?
And you were just, I can see the smile on your face right now.
I was so excited because I was like, man, I'm getting paid to work. This is cool, you know?
Yeah, I could have an apartment of my own and homogenized milk.
Yeah, and I...
Second dress.
And I did, you know, and for her, I did. I went to her, basically represented her at events and did more letter writing, but also did... was kind of like her research person. Whatever issues she was tending to, I would find articles to kind of help her understand what was going on.
Because by then we had the internet up and going somewhat.
Well, no, I used readers. I remember going to the library and looking things up. And,
really?
Mm-hmm. I had a reader that I found through a volunteer group in that city.
Mm-hmm.
I remember right, and I had a scanner. I had I think it was a reading edge at that point.
Yeah.
And I did everything. I scanned the articles and would summarize them for her, and even helped with one of the bills she was considering. I thought of something, you know, about lead poisoning for kids, and I you know, helped come up with a draft for that, you know. And that was kind of neat.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I would think it would be a great experience for anybody, blind or otherwise.
It was neat. I mean, just to be in that concourse. I mean, I had mobility, so I knew my way all around the buildings, and there was always something happening, it seemed like. And it was a neat atmosphere to be in. But then, you know, elections come and go, and if your senator doesn't get elected, you don't have a job.
That's right.
So I thought, you know, I better find something else. So I found something. I became a budget analyst, which I hated. I found out how much I hated numbers.
A budget analyst?
Yeah,
for
I worked
who?
For the Department of Corrections. As a budget
in New York
analyst.
City? New York State?
Yeah, New York State still. And then I went, you know, I felt like I went from being a total independent person on a job to being a dependent person where I needed somebody for everything. It
really?
Was like, why did they have me? Like, I had a job coach and someone that could read the numbers from these big, big budget books. And I thought, this is boring. I got to do something else in life, you know?
Yeah, I can see that, but it was a job.
It was a job, and it was a paying job. But I'm the kind of person that if I'm bored,
yeah.
I don't, I like to feel like I'm adding value to something, and if I don't like what I'm doing, then you kind of wondered why am I here, you know?
Yeah.
And so I basically. Decided to.
Well, that's kind of a new thing with you, you younger people.
Oh, really?
Sure. When I was growing up, you did, you know, what you were told and damn well liked it.
Yeah. But I always questioned everything. I mean, I was always why? I always asked why. You know, always.
That's all right. That's good.
And so, I still do, but, I decided I better do something else, so I went to graduate school.
Did you? Went back to school?
I went back to school. I moved. I moved to Nashville, Tennessee.
Why?
Well, I could tell you I moved for love, but I'm not with that gentleman anymore.
Well, that's all right. We've all had loves that failed.
I did. Then boyfriend was going to school, and I thought I'd follow him across the country and move. And so I decided to go to Vanderbilt University, and I went and got
all right.
Master's in business. I got an MBA.
You'd never lived down in this hot part of the country before.
That was a culture shock to me.
It was,
going
I'm sure.
from New York to Nashville. Being a music person, I thought, wow, I don't really like country music too much, you know. But I was able to flip the radio and see that they had other stuff. So
yeah, they do.
I was, I really loved Nashville. I mean, if I could live there again, I probably would.
But then your relationship didn't work out, so then you were stuck in Nashville. But you went to Vanderbilt University.
You know, I got an MBA from it, so hey,
really?
It wasn't bad.
Hey, it wasn't bad.
And I still, I was able to get my MBA, and I still studied vocally. And one of the goals I had was to give a recital, you know, and I did. So a month before graduation, I got to sing like 10 classical songs. And
what venue?
At the Blair School of Music at Vanderbilt.
Okay.
And it was just something I always wanted to do, and so my teacher helped me do it.
And you got to do it, so you've always got that. I mean, they can't take that away from you, can they?
Mm-mm.
Well, by now we have you up to probably 30.
You have me at like 27.
Well, you've done a lot for a 27-year-old. You've had three or four jobs. You've gotten a degree in business. A PhD, master's?
MBA.
An MBA. And you're well schooled, and you've learned mobility, and so it's really ready to begin your life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
All right. Well, let's see what time we are here. Okay. Well, we'll continue. We got a little more time. What happened? 27 years old. You got your degree. You're in Nashville. Your romance is faded. Your boyfriend is gone, and so here we are.
We could write a song.
We could. It's a country song. It's coming to me here now. I was thinking, you said, well, I go New York to Nashville, what a long way. You know, I was already kind of planning that. Anyway.
Cool.
So, 27 years old, what did you do when you got out of Vanderbilt, graduated from Vanderbilt?
Well, it took me a year to find a job. And I mean, you interview with companies and people just, I mean, I even had teachers saying, oh, well, you kind of have to find a company that wants to take a risk because they want, you know, hiring blind people and stuff. And,
no, yeah.
And they were like, well, you meet all the quotas, Monica. You're Hispanic, you're a woman, and you're blind. You know, and I thought, great.
When do I start?
Yeah, so, I mean, I interviewed with companies on campus, but, you know, they didn't hire me. And then I did everything I could to stay in Nashville to, I mean, I don't know, I did whatever, you know, even doing telemarketing to, just so I could stay somewhere to try to find a job.
Yeah.
And my parents kept saying, well, come to Florida. And I thought, I don't want to go to Florida because my thing was, by them telling me they wanted me to go to Florida, I thought they would take away my independence, you know, and so we had this big argument, and I said, no, I'm not going. You know, I'm going to stay in Nashville, do whatever it takes, you know. And then when I was down to, like, $200 in my pocket, I went to some career thing on campus, and one of my teachers said, just act like you're my assistant. I'll get you in, you know. And I said, okay. And so I went and kind of met with different people, and I met with somebody from Enron Corporation in Houston, and I didn't even know I was being interviewed. We just had a nice casual conversation, and my professor walked me out later. We were doing something. I was helping with some new event or something, and he said, hey, I bet you I helped you find a job today. And I was like, yeah, right, you know. And that guy called me back, and he said, hey, I got your resume, and he said, would you be willing to come to Houston? I said, I'll go wherever the job is.
Really?
And he basically said, well, I'll keep you in mind, you know, haven't forgotten about you. And I mean, that was like in March, I guess, of 97. And I forgot about Enron. You know, I went and interviewed with another company. They were so close to hiring me. And then when I told them about the equipment that I had or would need help with, they must have told somebody else, and then they called and said, no, we gave the job to someone else. And I thought, man, here I am.
You were Hispanic,
mm-hmm.
you were female,
mm-hmm.
and you're blind.
Yes.
I mean, you met a lot of criteria that they like to fill. They like to hire minorities.
Exactly.
They like to hire qualified women. And I guess being blind would be their token handicap.
Yeah.
So you'd think people would just be, you know, and obviously you're bright. You'd think people would just be, you know, knocking the door down.
Right. But it, you know, it wasn't like that. And I interviewed with a company in Tennessee, and I thought, I mean, I was already planning where I was going to live because they made it sound like they were going to hire me.
Like they were going to hire
you. Talked about equipment and everything. And then we're not going to hire you.
The commission wasn't willing to spring for any equipment back then?
Not anymore. I mean,
they'd done all for you they could. You were off the books.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of still had a case open, and, you know, they wanted to make sure I was employed. But, you know, they kind of were like, let's see what happens. And then I, like I said, I had forgotten about Enron. And
yeah.
I had called my parents, and I said, okay, I'm ready to move. Because I had done everything I could. And my dad was like, the only reason I wanted you to move to Florida was so you'd have a place to live. And I thought, oh, why didn't I ask him that a year ago? I was, you know how I was. I told you I was kind of independent. So.
Well, what did you think they were going to do to you? You think you'd be back in grammar school or what?
I thought they would just, you know, because my parents always said, you know, you don't live with us, but you're still under our rules type thing. And I just thought if I live with them, then it would be a nightmare. I mean, I thought they wouldn't let me do anything. I thought, well, how am I going to find a job from their house, you know? I don't know. I guess
yeah.
When you haven't lived with your parents under the same roof for so many years, to go back, you know, it's like, it was like going backwards to me.
But your father said, all we want to do is give you a place to live.
Right. And I thought, well, why didn't, you know, he goes, yeah. Well, Monica, we just, you know, you saw things one way and I saw them a different way, and we just didn't communicate too good. And but then, now that we had that straight and my family had found some peace, you know, 2 days later, Enron did call me. And they said, you know, we want to fly you out for an interview.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, I remember the call to this day, and she's like, you know, is Monica here? I'm calling from Enron. And I said, are you calling from Houston, Texas? And she said, yes.
Really?
I said, yeah. And I said, really? And she's like, yeah. I said, we want to fly you out for an interview. I said, you really want to fly me out? I was like, no one's ever flown me out anywhere.
Yes, I think I could actually fly without a plane.
I was so happy, yeah. Phil. It was like
I can. This is almost as good as the politician that decided to pay you to be an intern.
Exactly. I mean, it was like because I had, and so I called my parents and I said they're gonna fly me out, and I went and interviewed. It was for their associate's program, and it's for people that have MBAs. They take the best, you know, I guess the best out of the brightest pool, and. You basically go on these six-month rotations where you learn about the company and then, you know, do different positions and then eventually, you know, you try to find another job. So, I mean, it was neat, you know.
Okay, now let's back up a little bit. You go on a six-month rotation doing what?
Well, the idea was that you would just do a six-month, basically I interviewed, you would do 6 months in different positions of the company doing, like, my major was marketing.
Okay.
Do different marketing activities and stuff. But when I went on the interview, I interviewed for a whole day with, like, eight different people.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first couple of interviews, I thought, gosh, this is rough, you know, but it got easier.
What was rough about it? The questions they asked you?
The questions and how I would... Basically, how I would do things, and I guess it was the questions. I mean, I was expecting questions, but you know, I don't even remember how I came up with the answers. But they liked me enough. I mean, when I went back to Nashville that night, I thought, you know what? Even if I don't get a position with them, I had the best interview experience in the world. Because even when you go to lunch, you're being interviewed, even though you don't know it. I had the best interviewing
experience. This may sound like a dumb question, but it you'll understand it. What did you order for lunch?
You know, I...
You understand why I asked
Yes,
that.
I do understand. And they took me to a Chinese restaurant because I thought, well, I'll order a salad, you know, because that's easy.
No, it's not easy because you got to cut the damn thing up.
Well,
order a hamburger every time.
I probably would have ordered a hamburger because that's easy. And, but see, when they said Chinese, I asked them, I said, well, would you mind helping me figure out what I have on my plate? And they were like, well, yeah, we'll help you. You know, and I said, do you need help cutting your food? And I was like, no, I want to do it by myself. And I did it. I think I did it for the first minute. And then I thought, well, would you mind doing this? Because
I would have ordered a bowl of wonton soup and egg rolls.
Yeah, but I don't like soup.
Oh, I would have ordered it anyway.
Yeah, but
if we'd gone anyplace else, I would have ordered a hamburger. Except that sometimes they'll fool you with a hamburger. They bought this damn thing open face.
Oh no!
You know, have you ever seen that? You've seen those. Of course, I don't have that problem because I'm not looking. I'm not going. Every place I go, I take somebody. I've got a lot of sighted people, so I don't have that problem anymore. But used to, it was a safety zone. Order a hamburger. You can't go wrong. You just pick the damn thing up and eat it.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. So you went to lunch, had Chinese food, and they were interviewing you, talking to you, and you start back. If they flew down and back in one day.
No, I flew there. No, I stayed the night. They put me in a hotel. And I stayed the night, and then the next day I had the interview and then flew back.
Okay. Hang on just a sec. Let's take this real quick break, and we'll talk about your career at Enron and how you got where you are today. Do it one more time.
Monica Svopa.
Did I get it right?
Yes.
Svopa is our guest from Houston, Texas, back with her in just a second. Gone to the light in your eyes, like a moth to a flame. Sound of your voice in the night, such a sweet serenade. Drawn to the light in your
plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do. And we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs. And so we formed this blind handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as blind like me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txqcom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
A trip to Walmart.
When you go to pharmacies, they sit somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at blindmysmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
Hi there, back with the third half of our show. Monica Svopa is our guest from Houston, Texas. She's had quite a lot of experience for a 35-year-old lady. So Enron hired you, bottom line.
Tell you that they Paul told me that he would let me know in a week.
Yeah.
I was being hired, and I thought, okay, great. But I'm so glad I wasn't home. That phone call came. It came the very next day.
You're glad you weren't where?
I'm glad I wasn't home to pick it up when he called me.
Why?
Because I don't know what I would have done. I'm glad he left a message, because I heard it, I listened to it about three times, and I wanted to make sure he said he was going to hire me. Because if I would have spoken to him in person, I probably would have cried or something. You know?
Like you would have screamed.
Yeah, and so I remember getting home and hearing the message and just crying, and just out of sheer joy. And finally, you know, after all that, I had,
finally somebody's hired me.
Yeah.
And the only reason they haven't hired me is because I'm blind, and that's so stupid.
I know, exactly, and so. I remember calling my parents and telling them, and my sister asking me, are you okay? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm great. And she goes, well, you're crying. And I said, but I got a job, you know.
A real job.
A real one that pays a lot of money.
Like those sighted people have.
Yes. And I was so happy. And I did. I moved to Houston and have been here ever since.
Well, that's, you say ever since. This was 97.
97,
so.
Yeah. And I went on the 6-month rotations, and that was kind of, it was, being there, it was a great company, you know, despite everything that happened. The people were amazing, and I got to meet a lot of people from different schools, and I did different marketing things, like market research, and I traveled, and since I knew Spanish, I helped with different Spanish things. Because I work, I think I work for four different companies within Enron, four different groups within.
Yeah, they had a lot of companies, I hear.
There were a lot. There were a lot of different divisions.
Yeah.
And the only thing was, if you were hired, but every 6 months you had to go on a rigorous interview process. Because,
really?
Yeah, because they wanted to pick the best candidates for that particular group, and so every 6 months. All the associates would all be like scrambling, you know, trying to figure out where we're going to work next, you know, within the company.
There is no doubt Enron had some forward-looking ideas.
Yeah, they did.
There was no question about that. The problem with Enron was their top management.
Exactly.
Were cooking the books. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
No, exactly.
But they were a forward-looking company, a progressive company, and you'd think, had things been done right, should have been a huge moneymaker.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, when you told people you work for Enron in Houston, it was like, everyone was like, well, can I give you my resume? Can I get a job there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody wanted to work here, you know, and it was just an up-and-coming company, and I mean, I said I would never leave there. I mean, the only way that would happen is if I got fired or I died, because it was just a great place to work. You know?
Tell us about the end. When did you folks realize that this company was built on less than solid ground?
Well, for me, I mean, they really did tell us to believe. They really just had us believing that everything was going to be okay, you know. And I had met my. Well, he was then my fiancé, and we met long distance, and we dated long distance, and I was actually planning our wedding. And
long distance?
Yeah.
And you'd never seen this guy? You'd never been close to this guy?
No. I mean, we had met. My roommate lived in Virginia, and he worked with her.
Okay.
And so, my college roommate, and
yeah, this lady that you, girl that you became friends with,
yes,
in college.
Yes. Yeah, so we stayed friends, and she wanted to introduce me to someone, so we met over the phone, and then we started dating, you know, visiting each other and stuff. And so we dated for, you know, about a year, 14 months or so. And we were planning our wedding. And, I mean, I think it was like November 28th when the stock went to junk.
Yeah.
And that, I freaked out. I mean, I called Tom, and I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, because they were saying something's going to happen big, guys, get ready, da-da-da. Like, even in my group, they were like, you know, they're having some big meetings. And so, I remember.
But you didn't realize those big meetings were good because the company was falling apart.
Once it went to junk status, we all started freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, because we were like, okay, well, this is bad, you know. And then when they declared bankruptcy, I was like, okay. And I remember going into work that Monday.
Yeah.
And I told my Metrolift driver, I said, I probably won't see you tomorrow. And she goes, you're joking, right? And I went, no, probably not, you know. Because, I mean, the company went into bankruptcy. You're like, how long do you think you're going to have a job?
But you did go to work that Monday morning with her.
Everybody went to work that Monday morning. And everybody, I mean, sat at their desk. And they basically, at 11 o'clock, called us in. And everybody in the building, they called everybody into their respective floors at 11 o'clock and said, quietly exit the building. You have 30 minutes to leave. And we said, well, how about our jobs? And they said, well, call your voicemail. That's how you'll find out you have a job or not.
And that call, of course, never came.
Of course. You called your voicemail, and they said, you know, well, we can't hire you back. And so you know what I did? Since I had all that equipment at Enron, I had made arrangements with a coworker of mine. I said, can I get a ride home? And she said, yeah. I said, I'm taking one piece. If I can't come back, I'm grabbing the Braille display. And I took it home.
And that's all you took?
That's all I took, yeah. Because I thought, they're not going to use that, you know. And then I did come in 2 days later with Tom, and I did go through an exit interview, and my boss said, take whatever you want. And I said, well, I already took the one piece I wanted. He goes, okay, good.
And taking that Braille display has proved to be a good thing, hasn't it?
Very good. I mean, I didn't have the thousands of dollars to pay to buy one. You
and
know
this
what
place
I mean?
You're working doesn't have that kind of money either, do they?
What is it?
The place you're working doesn't have that kind of money either.
No.
So you got a Braille display.
Yeah, and I had already, Enron had already bought me a Braille printer, so I have that at home, too.
We're down to about 3 minutes. Is there anything in your notes that we didn't talk about? You said you had some notes and.
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
You have Braille notes and you're laying in your hand there.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going through anything else I wanted to tell you. I do. I didn't tell you that. My husband and I own a business, that we're working on too. So.
Okay, tell us about that.
Well, it's we sell products, kind of health based and skincare based, good vitamins, protein bars, and stuff like that. It's a multi-level, you know, company.
Yeah.
But we really enjoy it. It's kind of a way to help people change their lives and help people with convenience. So.
Well, I got no problem with that. I'm not interested, but there might be somebody who is, and we would certainly. Do you want to give it an email address or something?
I'll give you my email address.
Sure, you might as well. And who knows? You might somebody might be might want to get involved with you.
Yeah.
And,
my email address is VOPA, S, B as in Victor, O, P as in Peter, A, at B as in Boy, www.com.
BWW.com.
Yes.
Svopa at BWW.com, and that's all you need. That's a home address and a business address and everything.
Yes.
So what kinds of things? You have skincare products, you have...
You have
vitamins, you have food supplements, or what do you have?
Products for your home, cleaning products, water treatment systems, basically anything anybody needs. We kind of help them talk about what they need and what their needs are, and then we try to fill them. So.
I have some very good friends who do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And are very close friends of mine. They're Robert Herridge, who lives out in Katy.
Oh, wow.
He's a very close friend of mine. Do you know him?
No, I don't.
Well, anyway,
But Katy's real close to me.
That's what they do. You live out that way?
I do. I live 10 minutes from Katy.
Well, I wish I'd known that. I come to a little restaurant in Katy and play a couple times a year.
Oh, neat.
It's called Texas Traditions.
I love that place.
You do?
Uh-huh.
Well, I come down there and play a couple, three times a year. They haven't called me in about 3 months. It's about time for me to call them, I guess.
Maybe.
Anyway, they've got a hell of a chicken fried steak, I'll tell you that. It's
they have
wonderful.
Good chili, too.
Do they?
Chili pie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. We're just running out of time. Well, you, your attitude seems to be good. So you got this job, this Braille transcription job shortly after the Enron thing.
It took me about a year because I went into shock and depression. But, we did get married. I did have a good wedding and a good husband that really cares. So.
That really cares, but you have to tell him every once in a while now. I've been riding these buses. A hell of a lot longer than I've been with you, boy.
Exactly.
I'm going to ride him.
He's a great man, though.
You know, he's never been blind, and he doesn't understand it. And
right.
He can't.
But he, like everyone else, they just admire and, you get all the your inspiration type stuff. And,
I love it.
If I can help somebody's life, that's worth it,
And you'll take all that admiration he wants to give you, won't
exactly.
you?
Exactly.
Monica Svopa, you've been a delightful guest. I appreciate you, and I don't know when this will run, but I'll give you a heads up before it does. How's that?
Well, it's been wonderful, and you do such a great service. Just the people that you interview, I've heard the shows, and it's just, you do a great thing.
Thank you. It's gotten so relaxed, I actually enjoy it, hearing about people's lives. Well, anyway, thank you much, and I'll talk with you.
Great.
Thanks, Monica. Bye-bye.
Bye.